The Athletic.
Totally Football Show, European edition. Today, Champions League, old friends reunion special, as Tommy T takes on Pep, Carlo faces Frankie, and Romelu meets old friend, crushing disappointment in front of goal. We look ahead to the midweek action, catch up on the weekend's big beefs, say hands off mothers, and ask, where did all the goals go? It's the Totally Football Show.
Tuesday the 11th of April. Listen, thank you for joining us. Conditions unusual, I would say, for today's Totally Football Show. We've got, Julien Laurent is here with us, right, Jules?
Bonjour.
Also, Alvaro Romeo has made the trip in. Thanks, Alvaro.
Buenos dias.
To you too. James Horncastle comes to us from Milan.
Milan.
All right, James. Yeah. Well, you've got the Turin Shroud as your backdrop there.
Yeah, very much. That's why I've got my beard and hair.
Yeah, actually.
After the whole Easter weekend. I am the Turin Shroud hoaxer.
Good Lord. Raphael Honigstein, he's not here. Not here. What? I know. Yeah. But he's on his way to Manchester, but he will be joining us in a little bit via the magic of me having recorded him earlier.
In a spirit. He'll be here in a spirit.
No.
Anyway.
He does lay down some sound, though, but his heart was never in it, I've got to say. Let's get a moment of the weekend from everybody. James, what's been yours?
It's got to be Jose Mourinho destroying Antonio Cassano in his press conference. Because Cassano had been on Bobo TV, which is his Twitch channel with Christian Vieri, Lele Adani, Nicola Ventola. And he said that he's always hated Mourinho's teams. They're awful. They're unwatchable. And Mourinho just out of nowhere said, ah, yes, Cassano. He's played for three teams that I've coached different times. One was Real Madrid, where he was famous for the fur coat that he showed up in. One was at Roma, where I think all he won was the Italian Super Cup and he didn't even play. And the other was Inter, where he didn't even win the Coppa Lombardia, the Lombardy Cup, you know, kind of Sunday league. So Cassano's replied, because he just can't let these things go, and has told him that, you know, Mourinho is telling lies and all this sort of thing. But yeah, it's been good. It's fun.
All right. Love a spat like that. Alvaro.
I'm going to keep the bad moment of the week for later.
Okay.
Even though Jules wants me to include it.
Jules is hot for that.
Yeah, it's very hot. Fight. It's very hot for that. And we're going to talk about that later, I promise. But my moment of the week, of the weekend, must be Samu Chukwueze scoring a brace at Santiago Bernabeu.
Marca!
Not only because scoring two goals at Santiago Bernabeu, it's already quite something, because the quality of the goals was sensational. The first one just breaking Nacho's waist completely after a really good feint, and the second one a la Arjen Robben at Santiago Bernabeu. I think that this is a career-changing brace for Samu Chukwueze. Number one, because you do it at Santiago Bernabeu. And number two, because this was a player who was very good. I think that Villarreal is a very good platform for him. And I think that after this, he will be probably a little bit more monitored by the big clubs. Because when you do this at Santiago Bernabeu, you are really making a huge statement.
13 goals and 11 assists in all competitions this season. 11 of those 13 goals since Kike Setién took over. And what an impact he's had. We'll hear much more about that game, Real Madrid. Tumbling to defeat after a couple of big wins for the Madrileños. Jules, what about you?
I didn't know if I was going to go for a sad one or for a happy one.
Okay.
I'll go for the happy one. Gigio Donnarumma, who had a masterclass on Saturday night with PSG and Nice, saving everything. L'Equipe gave him a rating of 9 out of 10. 9 out of 10. It's really rare to get 9 out of 10 and 10 out of 10. It could probably have got 10 out of 10, to be
fair.
It was that good. Mm. It was incredible.
What would the sad one have been?
Désiré Doué, the young Rennes player, who was subbed on and then subbed off 17 minutes later by Pep Genesio, who's not so much Pep Genesio anymore. He's really, really back to Bruno Genesio and the bad manager that he is. That was mean. That was mean from him. But yeah, I'll tell you all that on the show.
Okay, brilliant. Looking forward to that. And of course, Rafa, didn't want to let Moment of the Weekend go by without providing his own. Here it is.
Moment of the Week, James, was halftime in the game between Gladbach and VfL Wolfsburg. A very topical protest by the Gladbach fans. They were throwing painted eggs onto the pitch, James. And you know why?
No.
Because they were protesting against the kickoff times. Borussia Mönchengladbach, only 9 games at 15:30, which is the traditional kickoff time on Saturday. They are often picked as, you know, special game of the night or Friday night or Sunday, which means out of 34 games, only 9 times were they playing on the traditional kickoff times.
I see. But magnificent.
I'm pleased to report that no man or chickens were hurt in this protest.
But it's really nice that they're not just randomly throwing eggs. They actually take the time to paint them first.
Absolutely. And you can probably eat them as well. Because I imagine they'd be boiled. Otherwise, they wouldn't make good missiles.
Well, that's true. Very nice. Rafael Honigstein. More from him very, very shortly, because we're going to get on to the Midweek Champions League.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network and sponsored by LiveScoreBet. You can get the latest football betting odds at LiveScoreBet.com. It's over 18s only. Please bet responsibly and begambleaware.org.
Midweek Champions League, everybody. Woo! Tuesday, Man City taking on Bayern Munich. Benfica, at the same time, hosting Inter. On Wednesday, then, it's Real Madrid against Chelsea, while Milan face Napoli. Who's going to win these? Jules, have you done a bracket?
I haven't yet. I've done my NBA one, but not my Champions League one. I just didn't think about it. I can tell you who's going to win.
Can you tell us?
Thing. Yeah, of course. So City would be Bayern, just about.
Really?
Yeah. Benfica would beat Inter Milan and qualify. Napoli would still beat Milan, and Real Madrid would beat Chelsea.
Okay.
And then I'll do the rest of the bracket once the just before the semifinals.
Seems legit. Anyone want to disagree with those opinions?
That's almost spot on, but Manchester City-Bayern for me is a 50-50 one. Okay. I'm going to go for Bayern, just in the interest of the conversation.
Good.
Just to
What's your rationale, Alvaro?
But there's none, because you said just for the interest of the conversation.
No, there is more than that. No. Because I do believe that Bayern has a chance, really. I think that they are dangerous. I think that on the break they can catch Manchester City. And also because the quality of their players up front can make the difference. And Pep Guardiola knows very well about the danger of a Thomas Tuchel side.
Bruno Guardiola, as I call him. Yeah. We'll be getting Rafa's take on that game, of course, ever so soon. James?
I liked when Alvaro said, because Bayern are dangerous. It reminded me of that Val Kilmer, Tom Cruise scene in Top Gun. But yeah, anyway, my general point would be that Benfica tonight, Otamendi suspended. Alexander Barr, the right back, is missing for 4 weeks. Grimaldo's a doubt. That's 3/4 of your defense. Mm. Inter can't score goals at the moment, but they're creating lots of chances. They're only not scoring because Lukaku keeps hitting everything other than the goal. So is this going to be the catch-up game? The one where you're knocking on the bottom of the catch-up over and over again, and then
the
suddenly
catch-up game.
It splurges out.
Where'd you get that from, James? The catch-up game.
I remember Gianluca Vialli talking about that. So it's a Vialli-ism. And the other game, did you say Napoli, Jules, to go through?
Yeah, still. I know they lost 4-0, but still, you know.
Osimhen's a doubt tonight for tomorrow night. Simeone's injured as well. So they're coming up against the team that always beats them. So that's the only things that I would throw in the mix there. Mm. Just for the interest of conversation.
Of course.
Alvaro,
of course.
Yeah. It's a lovely lineup, though, isn't it?
No one trusts Chelsea, by the way.
Anyone trust Chelsea?
No.
At what?
Well, we're here maybe a bit later on. Man City, Bayern. Let's get the opinions of Rafael Honigstein, who's currently speeding towards the Fair City of Manchester on a train. Rafa, you're heading up to Manchester in time for Man City's clash with Bayern Munich. What are you anticipating?
I'm anticipating one of the best games in the Champions League this season, James. Bayern have had problems. They've been inconsistent in the league. But when it comes to the Champions League, they've produced all their best performances. You saw them get past PSG with not that much fuss. They knocked out Barcelona in the group stage. They beat Inter twice. So this is the time for them to shine, at least when it comes to recent history. But of course, they've really, they're up against the worst possible draw in Man City. They know that. I'm sure Man City didn't relish playing Bayern at this stage either. And Bayern go into this with a sense of being a little bit of the underdogs. And I think that's to do with their inconsistent and slightly unconvincing form in this calendar year.
Mm.
But maybe we'll see the best get the best out of them on Tuesday night.
Perhaps. The one thing Bayern haven't been in the Champions League, at least, is inconsistent. The only team in the competition to win all eight of their matches so far. Those games coming under the tutelage of Julian Nagelsmann, the previous manager. How much do you anticipate things changing? Do you see them as improved under Thomas Tuchel in terms of an opponent for Man City?
Well, we will see if they improve. Tuchel has had three games in charge. He's won two, lost one in slightly dramatic and perhaps comical fashion. They should have not get knocked out by Freiburg in the cup last Tuesday, but they were. They conceded a last-minute penalty, which was converted, and they were suddenly out, and the treble dream is over. But in the league, they've played well enough. They've won those two games away to Freiburg and at home to Dortmund. Not easy games for Tuchel to start with. But of course, the big test will come now in those two ties. Sorry, in those two legs against Pep's Man City. Tuchel made a good point in the press conference. He said, "You can see that Guardiola has been there for nearly 7 years. You can see it in the way the team plays. Tuchel, by contrast, has been there for 12 days. So yes, of course, he's changed a few things." He's changed the formation a little bit. He's at times changed the tactical setup because they were a little bit less eager to press against Dortmund, for example. Against Freiburg, there was no pressing because Freiburg were deep and left them the ball. So it'll be very interesting to see what kind of strategy we'll see in the Man City games, whether it'll be more reminiscent of Tuchel's Chelsea, who often sat back and then played on the break, or more like Bayern have been playing in recent years, which is to be quite aggressive and try to press high. So that's going to be a big change if indeed it happens. And then the other change, of course, is in personnel. Tuchel has had some different ideas. He's played a lot more Leroy Sané than Nagelsmann had done in recent weeks. Made it almost his pet project to get Sané back in form, with mixed results so far. And he, in a way, has to improvise and has to change things because there's no Eric Maxim Choupo-Moting up front, who's been an absolute mainstay for Nagelsmann and has shaped the tactics to a certain extent. Now we're back to either strikerless system or this 4-2-2-2 system, which didn't really have a recognized forward, but instead like four players with interchanging positions. So that's another interesting choice he'll have to make.
Mm. It'll be Bayern's first meeting with Pep Guardiola since he departed as their manager back in 2016. Erling Haaland, though, they've seen plenty of in the intervening years. Haaland with 5 goals in 7 matches against Bayern in his time at Dortmund.
No
wins, yeah. Mm. So how do you see Thomas Tuchel dealing with the Haaland question?
Well, he dealt with the Haaland question in the press conference by saying, of course, we have to do this together. You can't stop him individually. You'll have to stop the supply, you have to control the passes. Again, in the past, the teams who've had success were those who set quite deep, take away the space for Haaland to run into. As you know, Haaland loves to play on the shoulder of the last defenders, incredibly quick. And when you provide that space behind, then it becomes very, very difficult, even if it helps you to put pressure on midfield. So you have to die. In Germany, you say you have to die one death. You know, you either defend the space or you try to put pressure on the ball. It's hard to do both at the same time. We've seen some teams try to sit back, but at the same time try to be quite present when it comes to pressing midfield. It's a hard thing to do. Let's see if Bayern can pull it off, because I personally think that playing on transition might be the best option, both when it comes to defending Haaland and his deep runs, but also exploiting that space that City do leave behind, because it's one thing that they're perhaps vulnerable to, that is quick counterattacks, and Bayern have the players for it.
Mm, magnificent. All right. Well, in the meantime, in the league, they got their revenge on Freiburg for being knocked out of the cup with a 1-0 win this weekend. An absolute stormer of a goal from Matthijs de Ligt.
Jetzt weiter rum, de Ligt mit dem Distanzschuss und das ist das Tor! Ist das zu fassen? 1-0 für den FC Bayern München.
Keeping them 2 points clear of Borussia Dortmund in the Bundesliga title race. Dortmund, who themselves defeated the other team in with the title shot, Union Berlin, with a 2-1 victory. Dortmund bouncing back a little bit there, Rafa.
They did bounce back. They needed that result after two very disappointing results. One, which knocked them out of the cup, as you mentioned. The other, of course, the Bayern defeat the week before. So for them especially, those defeats posed all the usual questions about a lack of mental fortitude and seriousness and all these problems that are associated with them. But they did play well against a very difficult opponent. They scored the winning goal slightly against the run of play with Youssoufa Moukoko and Marco Reus both combining in a sense, because there was a lucky deflection on the way as substitutes. And he took their chance well, and it was a huge 3 points for them that keeps them on the coattails of Bayern and puts them in a position to take advantage if there are any more slip-ups. So it's good for Dortmund, it's good for the league that they're still in with a realistic chance, and it's mid-April, and perhaps secretly I would expect Dortmund to hope that Bayern go a little bit further in this competition, which perhaps will continue to take their mind off just a little bit those domestic meetings and engagements.
Raphael Honigstein. Jules, you weren't as impressed as Rafa was Bayern against PSG.
Definitely not against PSG. Even in the group stage, if you think about the Barca game in Munich, where Barca were the better side in the first half, should have scored, didn't score, okay, and then in the end ended up losing the game. But against Inter, I just don't think that Bayern have been that amazing any time this season, really. And I thought they were good against Freiburg at the weekend, to be fair to them, even if they only won 1-0 and it's a De Ligt long-range shot, blah, blah, blah. I thought they were good, but I don't think that they've saved their best for the Champions League at all this season. And to be fair, the most fascinating for me is what Tuchel would be thinking now, because the two of the biggest wins of his career were against Guardiola, the Champions League final and the FA Cup semi-final, both of them with a back three, both of them with a very clear sort of tactical method on how to beat City. And I don't understand why he would not do the same tonight. I know it's a different team because it's Bayern and not Chelsea and they've got different qualities. But I don't understand why he would go to a back four when the back three has worked so well for him and his method against a very similar City side under Pep, okay, without Haaland at the time, and now there's Haaland. But still, I mean, I'd be kind of even disappointed if he goes to a back four, because I thought, hey, go to a back three, do what you've done before.
Maybe he does a back four. Let's see about that. Perhaps a back three. But at Chelsea, he did in 86 games in charge, 66 back threes. Mm. Even though the template was there, because 2 years or 3 years before him, Antonio Conte was using that system. So it was some sort of the Rosetta Stone for Chelsea at that time. But let's see if he does it with Bayern.
All right, Alvaro. Well, that's one of the games coming up on Tuesday. Of course, the other one is in Portugal, where Benfica face Inter, an Inter team who once again disappointed this weekend. To tell us more about all of that, James Horncastle.
This is the Totally Football Show, sponsored by LiveScoreBet. With BetBuilder from LiveScoreBet, you can combine markets from thousands of options to create your own bet on the biggest football fixtures in the Premier League, the Champions League, the EFL, and around the world. So if you think you can successfully pick the first goal scorer, the final score, the total number of corners, and whether there'll be a red card, then use BetBuilder from LiveScoreBet to make up to 6 selections and get a single bet with the combined odds. Or if you can't make up your mind, you can choose from the pre-built quick bet options. BetBuilder from LiveScoreBet. Building a bet just got easier. Find out more at livescorebet.com or by downloading the LiveScoreBet app on Android and iPhone. It's over 18s only. Full account terms apply. And of course, please bet responsibly and be gambleaware.org.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
James! Hey, that race for next season's Champions League places is taking an interesting turn, eh? Your top three currently in Serie A, Napoli, Lazio and Roma.
Yeah, the Centro-Sud. Very much a geographic role reversal, if you like, in terms of where the power lies in Italy at this moment in time. But, yeah, Inter keep fluffing their lines. They are creating chances and chances and chances. They're not taking them. That was the case against Salernitana on Friday afternoon, on Good Friday afternoon. And to be honest, they were caught out in the end by that Candreva cross, which ended up flying over Onana and went in. And it meant that they dropped points again. But really, it depends what you judge a team on, because the team is creating, they're getting into the final third, but they're just not taking chances. So how much of that is on Simone Inzaghi and how much is on his players? Because Inzaghi goes into this game under lots of pressure. You know, we've already spoken about this on the podcast, how, you know, his position will be reviewed at the end of the season. But with these bad results in the league putting their qualification for the Champions League in doubt, it does almost bring forward that review and certainly make tonight's game against Benfica pivotal.
Pivotal. They're currently outside the top four in Serie A, facing a Benfica team who themselves were defeated this weekend by Porto, whose manager, Sergio Conceição, is currently being touted by the Gazzetta as the man most likely to take over from Simone Inzaghi. There's going to be a lot of talk on that subject, no doubt. But it's a fair point you make about the number of chances that that team is creating. Still, winless in their last six in all competitions. What about, though, the teams ahead of them? What about this extraordinary Lazio, who we witnessed on Saturday evening with a real big team performance against Juventus?
Yeah, they were magnificent, particularly in the first half against Juve. They hemmed them into their own half at the Stadio Olimpico. And, yeah, this is what Sarri has been doing so far this season. They've beaten every team in the top seven, so you can't really begrudge Lazio where they're at. It's not only their big game performances, but also the fact that this team is really hard to score against. And you even look at Juventus' equaliser, which came out of nothing really from a set play. They had to really bundle the ball in. They had to almost like run over Ivan Provedel in the Lazio goal in order to score. But yeah, it's a very well-rounded team. I think Sarri, after taking over Simone Inzaghi, Inzaghi had been at Lazio for 5 years. He'd really kind of ingrained 3-5-2 into this team. It took a year for Sarri to wean the players off that and kind of implement his own ideas, have a couple of transfer windows. And I think now this is the closest team to Sarri's ideas since his Napoli side, because we saw him obviously have to compromise at Chelsea, compromise at Juventus. This feels very him, and for that reason, they seem to be a lock to get into the Champions League next year, which is extraordinary when you think that Immobile's had most of the season now injured. Milinkovic is now scoring, but has had a fairly poor spring. So really impressive.
And we saw maybe the assist of the season, that Luis Alberto assist for Zaccagni is just something so special.
Take us through that. That was the winning goal.
Yeah, it's the cross from the right hand side, and basically Luis Alberto is on the penalty spot, let's say, and behind him there's Zaccagni. And I think 95% of the players, even at that level, would probably hit the ball when he comes from the cross if you're Luis Alberto. But instead, and you see him looking just before the ball gets to him, and he just backheels the ball behind his back to Zaccagni, who then has this open shot and he curls it very well, like kind of like Thierry Henry finish.
Felipe Anderson, palla retrata, Luis Alberto, colpo di tacco, Zaccagni, magnifico gol della Lazio, minuto 8, Zaccagni porta Ancora di nuovo in vantaggio la Lazio.
But it's all about the back heel assist from Luis Alberto, who was a magnificent player before Sarri, had his up and down with Sarri, and now he's back to his best, to be fair to him and to Sarri. But yeah, wonderful piece.
How far do you think Lazio fans can dream, James? We saw Sarri's Napoli making consecutive bids for the title. Is that a conversation that Lazio next season might be in?
Perhaps. I think it's still difficult because Napoli are a team that have, for the last decade, regularly got into the Champions League, which has brought regular access to Champions League money. You know, for example, a lot of people want to present this Napoli team as a very romantic champion, but they're not Atalanta. This is a team that has cost about 250 million to put together. Osimhen cost 70 million. And Irving Lozano, 45 million. They can aspire to do what they're doing again now, but it'll be, you're relying again on dysfunction within Serie A. And to be honest, there is plenty of dysfunction in Serie A. That's why we're going to have a fourth different champion in 4 years. So within that context, James, I suppose you could make an argument that if a team has a good run for 3 or 4 months, it is enough to win the league in Serie A these days.
They certainly had a good run at the moment. 19 points from the last 21 available. Oh, you mentioned Atalanta. They are now themselves 4 points off the top four after getting beaten this weekend at home by the latest kind of revelation of the Italian coaching scene, Thiago Motta and his Bologna.
Yeah, who I think have the third best record in the league since Thiago Motta took over in September. He's really kind of thrust himself into the conversation to be the next Inter coach. You mentioned Sergio Conceição as well. So anyone with a backstory in Nerazzurro, it kind of works. But yeah, Thiago, remember this time last year, he was always on the brink of being sacked by Spezia. And then they would have these incredible results. They'd beat Napoli away. They'd beat Milan away. And it was enough to persuade Spezia to stick with him. And in hindsight, you look at that survival, and it's not a masterpiece, but it was very difficult to do. And he's doing great stuff at Bologna, really tactically weird stuff. Remember when he was at PSG, he gave that interview with Gazzetta dello Sport when he said his system was something like
2-7-2.
And that was purely because that's how he saw football from the sideline, rather than having the helicopter view of it. But if you look at what his tactics are, he's often chosen not to play Marko Arnautovic, not play a striker. He's played Lewis Ferguson, the Scottish midfield player, often as a false nine, or Sansone there. He plays like Orsolini, scoring lots of goals. So that was a big blow for Atalanta, given that, you know, Milan and Inter didn't win. Atalanta, like Lazio, are not in any European competition at the moment, so it's a big opportunity for them to get into the Champions League, and they've kept blowing it. And even though they've got a really good group of young strikers, Hoyland, Lookman, Boga, Gasperini saying we need to kind of blow this team up a little bit in the summer because we've got loads of veterans who've been here throughout my time, 6 years, and we just need to clean house and reset.
All right. Wednesday, we'll see Milan-Napoli. Napoli, who were beaten 10 days ago by Milan 4-0 in Naples, bouncing back this weekend to an extent with a 2-1 win over Lecce, while Milan dropped points again at home to Empoli. Slightly rotated Rossoneri lineup there from Stefano Pioli, the manager. You're so confident, James, that Milan are going to go through in this tie because of heritage.
Not just that, just their record against Napoli as well. Mm. And you say so confident. No, I've just tried to be the devil's advocate.
Right.
The case that this is not going to be a one-sided tie, because everyone seems to be predicting Napoli will reach the final, or Napoli will coast through this game. And I think that's just ignorant of everything we've seen from Milan over the last 3 years and how they match up against this team. I would expect Napoli to be much better than we saw them 10 days ago when they played Milan at the Maradona. However, as we've mentioned, Osimhen's a doubt. So what do you do here if you're Spalletti? Do you risk him and risk losing him for longer? Because I think I mentioned on last week's pod that this season is kind of an outlier in Osimhen's career in Italy, in that he's pretty much been fit regularly, which has not been the case, you know, because in his first season he dislocated his shoulder. In his second season he had his eye socket smashed in and he's had to wear a mask ever since. And if he doesn't wear that mask, they lose and he gets injured because it's a lucky charm. Simeone's injured. Simeone was the guy who played instead of Osimhen in the reverse fixture at San Siro, scored the winner, and he's not available. So there are little things there that, again, should give you confidence if you're a Milan fan.
Mm. All right. Fair enough. Alvaro, you're nodding. You're convinced.
I am convinced, even though if you see the goal scorer list of Napoli in the Champions League, you will see that guys like Simeone, who is not available, but especially Raspadori, have stepped up to the challenge. But I don't know how much Raspadori playing is going to change Napoli's way of playing.
Well, Raspa is someone who likes to come short, link the play much more than Osimhen or Simeone. Osimhen and Simeone like to stretch the play, playing behind. So there's that aspect to consider. But I mean, Raspa, particularly in the first half of the Champions League group stages,
very good. Yeah.
He was very good, and so it's been a shame, really, that he's not played all that much, certainly in 2023, because remember, he was very good against England at San Siro for Italy, and he wasn't even in the Italy squad this time around because he's just not been playing. So he's a very talented player.
Mm. One thing's for sure, though, James, and that is Calcio is back. Are you ready?
Oh, yes, James, I am ready.
This is a magnificent choice. I bet you wish Ligue 1 had A, had the reasons to make this, but B, thought of it. What a brilliant move. So, City has managed to get some teams into the quarterfinals of European competition.
Somehow, yeah, this time, yeah.
And so they,
I heard about it, yeah.
They've made this extraordinary, extraordinary advert with Fabio Capello and Fabio Cannavaro and Luca Toni.
Luca Toni.
And they all turn up in, what is, I imagine it's the Scala, is it the Scala? It is the Scala. Yeah. And they sit down and there's a little bit of awkward English with Fabio Capello saying,
are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
And then Luca Toni says, here we go. And it's, we've got some teams in the quarterfinal. Calcio is back.
Calcio is back.
So let's hope they win, James. Otherwise, it's going to be really awkward. Three teams, though, in the Champions League quarterfinals. And, of course, three in the Europa League and Conference League quarters. Maybe we'll move on to those competitions next.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX, stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show with James Richardson, sponsored by LiveScore Bet. You can get the latest football betting odds at LiveScoreBet.com. It's over 18s only. Please bet responsibly and be gambleaware.org.
Let's talk Europa League quarterfinals. Who's pumped for this? You got Leverkusen against Union Saint-Gilloise. Man United, Sevilla, Alvaro.
I really want to watch this one. It's going to be really interesting. Because
Sevilla are rubbish.
I would like to say something. New manager, they have changed. They weren't playing for San Paoli.
Right.
And some players like Fernando, for example, a week ago said, now we make some sense because nobody believed in San Paoli's tactics. You remember that moment in the season when Acuña gets a paper from San Paoli, apparently with some tactical explanations, whatever, and he drops it. He couldn't care less. But this Sevilla with Mendilibar is going to be different. Of course, they haven't been good, Jules, but I think that they can still play with a little bit more competence than before.
All right, did they have a big win at the weekend to boost
not
your
at all, not right. at all, but they were playing with 10 men for 71 minutes.
All right.
Because, again, Pape Gay this time, he was sent off for a ridiculous thing. Spanish referees have been really strict this season. There have been 6 red cards this weekend, and Pape Gay has been, again, a victim of the standards of Spanish refereeing. But we have to say that Celta arrived at Sánchez-Pizjuán in a really good run, and Sevilla, with 10 men, scored 2 goals, and then Celta at the end managed to get the equaliser.
Okay.
So, you know, they were competitive at least.
I see. This game's going to be at Old Trafford on Thursday.
Yeah.
Where Man United have put a good run together against La Liga sides.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, it's true that Real Sociedad in the group stage top the group with Manchester United, but that was a different Manchester United in construction still. This is a more composed side. Manchester United eliminated Barcelona. They eliminated Betis comprehensively in both ties. But now they don't have Marcus Rashford. And Marcus Rashford was a player that Spanish football couldn't contain, or Spanish clubs, sorry. But maybe now without Marcus Rashford, maybe Sevilla have more chances, because I think that Anthony Martial is not that ready yet to play 90 minutes at a high level.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. So you think Sevilla have a chance?
I think Manchester United is the favourite, but at the same time, Sevilla has a love story with this competition. We know about that. And En-Nesyri has scored, I think, at 11 goals after the World Cup, which is a really good sign. Kiss is still scoring goals. And I do believe that the team, Sevilla, at least with Mendilibar, is making some sense. If they cannot play from the back, they play direct football. The players are more compact, and they are looking for En-Nesyri and for the tall players in the box more often. And I think that Sevilla should embrace this system, because they wanted to play in a certain way in the past, with Sampaoli especially, and it didn't work for them.
Interesting. I'm looking forward to that game as well.
Definitely looking forward for it.
Although there are such enticing other ties happening at the same time, like Roma Feyenoord. James, you pumped for that one? Feyenoord, 8 points clear at the top of the Dutch Eredivisie of Ajax and PSV. A 5-1 victory for them at the weekend over Valvik. Roma?
Well, we saw Roma, didn't we, James?
We did see Roma. Bits of them.
17 clean sheets this season for Roma, by the
way.
Well,
that's true. That is true.
And when it comes to these ties, Mourinho knows how to keep the other team scoreless.
Yeah, 6 clean sheets, I think, in their last 8 as well. But you've also had a derby defeat in there against Lazio. And this weekend, there was 1 shot on target, I think, which was Paulo Dybala's penalty. Is that fair?
It is, but as Alvaro says, look where they are. They're 3rd in the league. And if Roma were to make Champions League this year, either through the league or through winning the Europa League, that would constitute real success. Are they great to watch? No, they're not, because we've just referenced their style of play, and that's what Cassano's got into a spat with Mourinho about. I think it's 27 years since Roma scored so few goals at this stage of the season, back when Totti was just a boy breaking into the team or playing as a number 10 or out left, and you know, Carlo Mazzoni was in charge. So in that respect, given that they've got Tammy Abraham, who didn't start at the weekend, Belotti didn't start at the weekend, They played Ola Solbakken kind of off Paulo Dybala. That's just Mourinho's tournament football approach, really.
It'll be interesting to see if he can shut the Dutch prospective champions down. Jules, you haven't got any skin in this game.
No, but it's the replay of last season Europa Conference League.
Absolutely.
And this Feyenoord team, I think we've said it before, who lost a lot of players. Like Desers and Sinisterra and Senesi and, you know, many more. Malasia, of course, to United, have rebuilt with a lot of new signing young players, and Arne Slot is doing an amazing job. A bit like, you know, he's a bit your twin, James. And he looks like you a little bit. He's not as handsome as you, but he looks like you a little bit. He's doing an amazing job, I'm saying. And
anyone who's bald and has a bit of a beard,
there's something else,
looks like Jimbo.
But like you said before, they're having an amazing season. And this is going to be tougher. You could see why in the final, I think the nerves got to this Feyenoord team, by the way, who were not as good as this one. In this tie is different, and there's also, I guess, the desire from them to have one back on Roma after the
defeat. For sure.
Also, the match winner from the Conference League final no longer plays for Roma, because that was Nicolò Zaniolo, who is now a Galatasaray player.
So true. Which of these four quarterfinal first legs are you going to be tuning into, Jules?
So I think I will have one screen on the United Sevilla game.
Okay.
And Roma Feyenoord is the one that fascinates me the
most. Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. And France have a team in the Conference League.
That's right, Nice, yeah. against Basel.
Basel.
Which is good, despite Nice's defeat on Saturday, we mentioned it already, against PSG. They are in great form, and this is a tie that they should win.
Okay. Magnificent. James, another eye-catching tie in there is Sporting against Juventus. Juve, who we saw...
Eye-catching?
I would say so, wouldn't you say? Yeah, Sporting are the kind of team you don't know what you're going to get. And Juve have been in terrific form until they came up against Lazio on Saturday. James, is your eye caught?
Yeah, absolutely. Paulo Sousa, who has a past with these clubs, was saying that any team that knocks out Arsenal has nothing to fear from Juventus, which was quite spicy. Particularly if you're a Juventus fan. But yeah, you mentioned Juventus have been grinding out results, James. Even in the second half against Lazio, they played pretty well, to be honest. They probably deserve to get something out of that game. But no, I think, you know, this feels like it could be a Champions League group stage game or round of 16 game. So let's see what happens. Dusan Vlahovic not scoring any goals, struggling. He's cancelled his Instagram account because he's probably fed up of going on ESPN FC's stories and seeing Jules saying, "Dusan, man, come on, Dusan, what the hell are you doing?"
I know, it's frustrating to watch.
It is, isn't it? One goal, I think, in over 2 months now, and that was a penalty.
But you know why? I remember that game against...
Do you remember it?
Nantes, yeah, where he missed... No. The Sampdoria game, maybe, where he missed all those chances and he missed a penalty, that he hit the post on the penalty. And you could see the frustration. And I think the service has been poor to him through the whole season. And we've said that before, that with the ball, they've never been great this season. So it must be frustrating for him. But yeah, it's a terrible record.
Mm. Yeah, and the thing is that he's not even... beautiful to watch. That's the thing, that there are some strikers.
He used to be such an exciting finisher,
but then his ball control and his touch and his link-up game is okay.
I think his confidence is completely shot.
Alvaro, do you not remember his debut goal in the Champions League against Villarreal? That was outstanding.
I do, but I think...
I don't. What did it look like, James?
It was Sampdoria, by the way. Thank you, Julian Lawrence.
Okay, back to you, James.
That goal, go and search it out, because Jules was talking about the lack of service. I mean, this is just like a hoof. It's hoofed up to him, and he brings it down, turns, and scores. And it goes to show what can be done with little and rubbish service.
Villarreal, il calcio spagnolo...
Vlahovic ha segnato un gol strepitoso dopo 35 secondi.
And I think that's why a lot of people were excited by him, because they thought, okay, well, he doesn't need that much service to be this good.
No,
but he clearly does.
I don't question his autonomy. I mean, he can do things on his own a lot. But what I question is the fact that maybe technically he's not the kind of Bergkamp type striker, that if he doesn't score, you still don't criticize him. This is the point I want to make.
I mean, you sound like Allegri, Alvaro.
I'm not sure that's a good thing.
Allegri always says that he needs to develop his game from a technical point of view, that sometimes he's maybe a little bit predictable for some of the markers. He needs to take his man marker for a walk around and then lose him and that sort of thing. All valid points. But the strange thing is, Italy, I think there are 100 fewer goals at this stage this season than there was last season.
Really, 100?
We're talking around those figures. I've just rounded
surprised.
Up or rounded down.
The lack of number nine efficiency in the league this season is pretty bad.
Welcome to my life.
Yeah, but
by the way, because La Liga is exactly the same.
Yeah, it's an odd trend, because obviously everyone's eyes are drawn to Osimhen. Osimhen scoring lots of goals, great centre forward play, going to be the first African to be Capitan in the league. But you look around, Immobile is in and out of the Lazio team because he can't stay fit at the moment. Lukaku, Dzeko and Lautaro are all in really lean spells and having moments of bad form. Tammy Abraham is on the bench for Roma. Belotti is on the bench as well. Giroud and Leao, for example, haven't really been scoring a lot in 2023. So it's and Vlahovic, you know, Moise Kean, when he's not kicking Gianluca Mancini and getting sent off, sometimes scores. But over the last international break, we had this big debate about Italy calling up Matteo Retegui from Argentina. But it's not just the lack of Italian strikers scoring in Italy. It's some of the big name foreign strikers as well having difficult seasons. So yeah, it's a weird quirk of 22-23.
All right, but in Spain as well, what about Liga, Jules?
We've got 100 more goals than last season at this.
You're kidding? That's where they went.
That's where they went.
Seriously,
it's okay. It's a heist.
Best league in the world, you know, the League of Talents. Is what we do.
That's amazing.
England is the only, the Premier League is the only league where you don't have that problem.
Yeah.
You have been in Germany as well, now that Lewandowski and Haaland have left.
Right.
In France, but the league is not as strong, obviously, but they're doing well in terms of Ben Yedder and Balogun and Mbappe and those kind of guys, even Alexis Sanchez. But for Spain, Italy and Germany, I think it's a real role. Really, like we were laughing before, but... And you could have next season where those guys are in form again, you know, Tamiz, et cetera, et cetera. But even in Spain, it's difficult.
But what happens in La Liga as well, probably in Serie A and Liga as well to different extents. But what happens in La Liga is that plenty of the attacking talent has left because there is a overall financial crisis.
Yeah.
And the Premier League sides, the first players that they are going to sign are the good ones. And the good ones normally are the forwards.
Right, but they leave all the good defenders there, which is why it's...
I'm not too sure about that. But also, look, I was checking some numbers before. Between 1990 and 2000, there were five top scorers, five Pichichis, that didn't belong to Barcelona and Real Madrid. Between 2000 and 2010, there were another five Pichichis that didn't belong to Barcelona and Real Madrid. Mm-hmm. Since 2010 onwards, all the Pichichis belong to Barcelona and Real Madrid. Normally, because Cristiano Ronaldo, Benzema, Messi are there. Okay, but how many players in La Liga, apart from the strikers of Real Madrid and Barcelona, have scored 25 goals or more? Maybe Radamel Falcao, the first one that comes to my mind. Mm. But Diego Costa, maybe? But who else? I don't think that there have been so many good strikers aside of Barcelona and Real Madrid in Spain in the last 12 years.
Mm. Crikey. It all sounds very dramatic. That, anyway, is the Thursday night picture in terms of the fixtures. Next up, let's hear about La Liga.
We're sponsored for this episode of the Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. It's your perfect teammate, the Sutton to your Shearer, the Heskey to your Owen, the Mane and Firmino to your Salah. Whether you're selling I Belong to Jimbo t-shirts or Max and Barry half and half scars, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to the Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally. This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Alvaro, before we move on, is there any chance that Frank Lampard can defeat his former manager Carlo Ancelotti in that exciting Wednesday night Champions League tie?
How many goals have Chelsea scored from open play in the Premier League? 19.
One nine.
They are playing against Real Madrid.
Okay.
Difficult to believe that they will eliminate Real Madrid, in my opinion. Even though Real Madrid has been inconsistent, but still in the Champions League, they've been consistent enough.
Okay, then. Alvaro, I want to hear more about Samuel Chukwueze and the incredible 3-2 win for Villarreal away at Real Madrid and all that kind of thing from La Liga. Also, the Copa del Rey semis, which we...
Oh, tell me about it.
They happened since our last show. Real Madrid beating Barcelona 4-0.
And Osasuna...
Yeah, beating
making it to the final.
Making it to the final against Athletic Club de Bilbao.
Exactly, yeah. Congratulations.
Did you cry? Did you be emotional?
It was very annoying. It was tremendously annoying because even Osasuna players and Arrasate, the Osasuna manager, said that they would have been happy with the penalty shootout.
Okay.
Because it was 1-0 for Athletic and they were attacking a lot, but we were missing a lot of chances. And at the end, they scored in the extra time.
Oh, no way.
Osasuna made it to the final. Congratulations to them. Right. Anyway, what can I say? But Real Madrid beat Barcelona very badly in the Cup second leg. And the truth is that it was one of those results that automatically brings a contradiction to all the narrative that we can say or, you know, use for Barcelona this season. Are they a very good defense because they are the side that has conceded less goals in La Liga? They have been domestically in La Liga, but anytime they play against Real Madrid, Bayern, Inter, a club like that, and they face good strikers, you can really tell that Barcelona's defense is so-so. Are they a side that, as a consequence of winning La Liga this year, they are going to be one of the top favorites to win the Champions League next season? Not at all. Not at all. On the basis of what we have seen lately in the Champions League, Barcelona is not longer a power force. And whenever they have to face a team like Real Madrid, you don't know what's going to happen. They beat them at the Clásico. They beat them in the Spanish Super Cup. But the other day, Real Madrid was playing for a title, a Spanish Cup. It's not a big one, but still. And they beat Barcelona 4-0. So analyzing Barcelona right now is difficult because domestically they have done very well, but you wonder how much that is dependent on Real Madrid not putting a fight in this La Liga. If they have done it, I think Barcelona would have crumbled a little bit under pressure. But this weekend, Real Madrid lost to Villarreal after beating Barcelona. And the truth is that, number one, we have to say congratulations to Villarreal because they put a really good performance, a Quique Setién performance, because Quique Setién is a manager that keeps a fundamentalist of his own style, but at least his teams resemble what he wants to do. And his teams resemble Quique Setién, basically. Villarreal passed the ball a lot, kept the possession. They were benefited, obviously, because Carlo Ancelotti was rotating a little bit ahead of the game against Chelsea, but they put a really good performance. They controlled the game in parts of it, and at the end, I think they deserve to win against Real Madrid.
Okay, and you think Samuel Chukwueze, junior Nigeria teammate of Victor Osimhen, of course, you think he's going to be the big news on the transfer market this summer?
He could be. The thing is that the performance he had against Real Madrid is one of these career-changing performances because you do it against Real Madrid at Santiago Bernabeu, scoring two beautiful goals. And I think that there are no doubts with him. Everyone at Villarreal thinks that he's a phenomenal footballer. And Samuel Chukwueze is a player who arrived in Villarreal a few years ago. Villarreal got him for their youth system. And he made it through the ranks. And, you know, he has had a little bit of an inconsistent couple of years due to injuries as well, to the point that sometimes he has lost his place in the lineup to Jeremy Pino, because Jeremy has been good as well. But I think that the raw potential of Samu Chukwueze is probably higher than the raw potential of Jeremy Pino or other young player of Villarreal. He's a very good footballer. Last season, for example, against Bayern, he was the one scoring the goal that sent Bayern out of the Champions League. And yeah, I think that he's got a bright future. He's fast, and this season he has managed to put some control to his speed. He's not using it that much if not needed, and I think that his accuracy has improved a lot. So yeah, this is a player to follow, definitely.
Chukwueze, by the way, out of contract in June 2024. So unless you renew him now,
you might
have to sell this summer.
Yeah. Jules is keen to hear more, though, Alvaro, about Valverde.
Yeah, because that game didn't finish when the referee just said, OK, that's it.
Right.
After 90 minutes, the players had the shower and all that, and there was an altercation. There was an altercation because Villarreal players went to take their own bus just to travel back to Villarreal. And what happened next to the bus? Fede Valverde, the Uruguayan footballer of Real Madrid, appears over there and punches Baena. This is not a rumor. This is factual.
Right.
This happened. Why? This is the question. Fede Valverde says that Baena in the past, which is 3 months ago in a cup game between Real Madrid and Villarreal, told him something about his pregnant wife. Because Valverde's wife had a problem with the pregnancy and it looked like they were going to lose the baby. Fortunately, the baby hasn't been born yet, but you know, everything is fine now. And according to Fede Valverde, Bayern has made a comment about that, and Fede Valverde didn't like it at all. Well, that was 2.5-3 months ago. After this game, Fede Valverde took his revenge and punched Baena. Baena denies that he said that to Fede Valverde. Baena says that he didn't do that, and he reported this to police. So there will be no sporting sanction for Fede Valverde.
No?
No, because this happened after the game, off the pitch, but there could be some fine for Fede Valverde just for punching another civilian in the streets. So yes, but Baena says that he never made any comment about Fede Valverde's wife, about Fede Valverde's newborn, nothing like that.
Okay, what did the rest of the Villarreal team do when Valverde strolled up and hit one of their teammates?
Well, that remains a little bit unclear. Alex Baena was very surprised by that. He was surrounded by some teammates, some staff of Villarreal, and the thing didn't go any further. There wasn't like a big fight or anything like that, because it was just basically Fede Valverde throwing a punch. And you know, this has been the conversation of the week in Spain. Also, Fede Valverde's wife in her Instagram has defended her boyfriend, so her husband, sorry. So yeah, I think that we may hear in the future Fede Valverde getting some financial sanction, something like this for this.
Extraordinary. Extraordinary. Jules, happy? Is there anything else you want to add to that?
I love a bit of UFC fighting, you know, in football. It's, you know.
All very regrettable.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Nuno Mendes, côté gauche. Le centre de Mendes, il va avoir une deuxième chance pour trouver Léo Messi au retrait de Nuno Mendes sur sa troisième tentative.
We saved a bit of Ligue 1 for you, listener, as a reward for staying with us. What a treat this is going to be, eh?
The league where all the goals is.
The league of talents.
What do you think, Jules, of the Messi? Messi in the Camp Nou in the 10th minute of the games.
Yeah, good for them.
That's it.
They don't have any money. Leave me alone. They don't have any money. How are they going to sign him? Well, he's going to play for free. Let's move on.
Messi certainly did. Yeah. Right. He had a better weekend, didn't he?
PSG
did. What a lovely goal.
It's a goal that you expect him to score.
You'd expect him to score.
We would. Not you and James, but me and Alvaro would score that.
You would score that. Okay.
But it's 1,000th, is that what you say?
I mean, yeah.
Goal contribution in a club level in his career.
James and I can say that. You can't.
No, I can't. 1,000th.
I'm not sure if I can, to be fair.
1,000th is a lot of third.
It is a lot of third.
But well done to him. 1,000 between goals and assists is pretty amazing.
How many has Ronaldo got there?
But he got 0 in his last game because he was frustrated by that 0-0 draw big time. Well done to Messi. He scored a nice goal. You're right, Nuno Mendes, the cross in what was a really tricky game away at Nice.
And it was a close game. I mean, a first victory for PSG in 3 after those back-to-back defeats, but it could easily have gone the other way.
Maybe it should have, because Donnarumma, as we mentioned in the moment of the weekend, made 7 saves. I think the XG for Nice was 1.5, so they were not all amazing chances, but there was still some big, big save that he had to make. And he kept PSG in the game. Very much so. He got 9 out of 10, as we said, in the ratings, in L'Equipe and in Le Parisien as well. And it was just outstanding. And it's the kind of game that we wish as PSG fans that maybe he had against Bayern, for example, or in those games or the last 2 defeats. But that shows his talent. And if he gets a little bit more consistent, then I think he could become the best goalkeeper in the world, which is not now, because there's still those games where he doesn't really turn up. Against Bayern, he makes a foul, he makes a mistake in the first leg on that goal, for example, you know, those kind of moments. But he was outstanding on Saturday. And what was a difficult evening for PSG?
Yeah. Dante denied an equaliser by the slimmest of margins thanks to goal line technology. Who do you have as the number one keeper in the world then? Let's go all playground on this.
Wow, that's a good one. I was really prepared for it.
You just mentioned it. Yeah, so who is?
Because there's a bit of a debate over Donnarumma and where does he stand amongst the Courtois and Ter Stegen, who's having a wonderful season. And, you know, Ter Stegen is one of the reasons why Barcelona are so ahead in La Liga. I think Alisson and Ederson are maybe not as good as they were in previous years.
Alvaro, who have you got?
Thing is that...
Like a top 10 for the Naruto, maybe?
If important saves count, yeah. Dibu Martinez has to be there. No, Emiliano Martinez has to be there. If important saves count.
Right. She just won a World Cup.
Yeah, he just won a small tournament for them.
That's fair, isn't it? What do you think, James Horncastle?
When he's fit, it's a guy who used to play for PSG. He didn't play for PSG, but he came through academy.
Yeah, Mike Maignan.
Could be
in the top five, yeah.
I guess it's a subjective
thing. Yeah, Jan Oblak hasn't been mentioned yet.
No,
because he hasn't been very good this season.
No, 2 years ago. This season, I think he's almost back to his best.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a good debate because I think Donnarumma has everything to be there, but not just yet.
Not just yet. All right, well, let's park that then and tell us all about Christophe Galtier making that lovely gesture of going over and applauding the Nice supporters, his former team, of course.
But not for the right reasons.
What was he doing it for?
He was very cynical.
Oh.
Yeah, he was not happy at all. And to be fair, I can understand him because the Nice ultras displayed a banner insulting his mum.
Mother?
Yeah, Galtier's mother. And then during the game, insulted her as well with a few chants.
Why his mother?
I guess, I don't know, like she's 83, she just beat cancer. But
that's terrible, Jules.
Yeah, but the Nice ultras, and I'm sorry if some are listening to the show and they might be, they've been known in the past for, not those nice things. I think he knew it was going to be tough for him to go back there. Because
if it was Rabiot's mother, if there was some kind of connection, you'd understand.
Yeah, but I guess you pick on what is hurting the most, the person that you want to hurt.
I
guess with Galtier, it was always going to be his mum. He was not happy. Yeah. There was a lot of tension between the two benches because the PSG side were saying to the referee, someone has to do something here. Mm. And they were saying to Nice, you can't let your ultras insulting your former coach's mum like that. Mm. And it was you could hear it on television. We were in France for the weekend. We were watching with my dad and the family, and the kids were like, and we were like, just don't listen to what they're singing because it was that loud and it was not that nice. So I can understand why Galtier lost his... It's cool. And he said after the game in a press conference, he said, my mum is 83. She just beat cancer.
Right.
You don't go there. And I think he's got a point, to be fair.
I completely think so.
But Kefren Thuram kind of confronted him because Galtier went to see the ultras and that added a lot of tension. It was quite ugly, to be fair.
It's been a lot of tension.
Yeah.
It's a game.
Yeah.
Everyone enjoys it.
Yeah.
Let's just get along, people.
I know. Yeah. That's true.
Lens stay 6 points behind Paris Saint-Germain. They do. Marseille don't. Marseille only drew.
Yeah, 3 draws in the last 4 for Marseille.
Is that right?
And then Lens travel to PSG to Paris on Saturday.
Oh, do they?
Huge
that
Saturday
is big.
Night at the Parc des Princes.
Well, what do you think? Because they're coming off a 2-1 win over Strasbourg. They've had 4 straight victories. They're particularly good at home.
Yeah.
But this game against Paris Saint-Germain very much at the Parc des Princes.
Yeah, at the Parc des Princes. But if they win, and they can win, we saw Rennes winning there, we saw Lyon winning there. There's no reason why Lens, who are a much better team than the other two, don't go there and win as well and close the gap to 3 points. It will be really fascinating. I think Lens have everything that PSG hates. The high intensity, the pressure, they run so much. There's a lot of movement. It's a back five as well. And Galtier, PSG don't like that. So it'd be very, very interesting to see what happens on Saturday night.
Well, that sounds exciting. Jules, anything else from Ligue 1?
Just what we mentioned at the beginning of the show on Désiré Doué, the young 17-year-old Rennes midfielder, very talented, who got taken off by Pep Genesio 17 minutes after coming on. He came on in the 70th minute when they were 2-1 down at Lyon, and then he took him off in the 87th, which I think... It's a humiliation. I don't think it works with any players, 17-year-old or 36-year-old.
Mm.
I don't think you just do that. I'm sorry. Unless there's a sending off or there's a red card and you need to change something, you don't take off a Serb that you've just brought on 15 minutes earlier. It's ridiculous. And he humiliated him. And if you look at those 17 minutes that Doué spent on the pitch, there's not even something that he did wrong, really. He lost the ball a couple of times, but he made 3 successful dribbles. There was not something that you would have jumped and said, oh yeah, he's really out of it, let's take him off.
Right.
So I don't understand what Genesio did there, but it's really bad.
He didn't apologize to the player either.
No. That's not what Pep Genesio does. He's Pep Genesio for a reason.
Leon won this game.
Yeah, 3-1, yeah. But Genesio didn't really cover himself in glory with that.
Right.
I disagree, yeah.
Okay.
I'm not okay with that.
All right. Excellent. So we got PSG Lens on Saturday.
Yeah.
James, what have you got that people should tune in for this weekend?
Go on, try to sell us your Udinese Roma game. Go on.
Yeah, it's true, Jules. We're going to be doing Udinese Roma live on Sunday.
Love it.
We're going to bring all the goals, probably two or three of them, from the other matches beforehand.
In the entire league this season, this weekend. Yeah.
Alvaro, what about you? What do you got?
The Bas Derby, Athletic Real Sociedad.
Bas Derby, woo!
Yeah.
When's that going to be?
On Saturday, 3:15.
So we can't watch it.
We can't watch it. Unless you have a trick to watch it.
And go but I don't have a trick. But I guess someone will be showing it delayed, perhaps. Mm. Or maybe I'll just read your live tweeting.
Yeah, that will do.
That will do. Brilliant. Magnificent. Well, that'll do for today's Totally Football Show.
What does Rafa have this week? Oh, he's not here.
Not here. Sure, I'll be tuning into those games and more. Many thanks in the meantime to producer Charlie, Alvaro, Jules, James, Rafa, and you, listener. From all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Discover bonus video content by searching for The Totally Football Show on YouTube and see the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally. The Totally Football Show is an Athletic Media Company production and sponsored by LiveScoreBet. Get the latest football betting odds at livescorebet.com. It's over 18s only. Please bet responsibly and be gambleaware.org.
The Athletic.